with episode 719 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and it's so strange remembering what I thought I'd forgotten.
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and I'm sort of curious where these recaps are going to end up as well.
That's right. We are going to be getting into some of our annual recap, as we're calling it right now, going back and looking at 2015 through 2016, the shows that were kind of ranked based on our aggregate scores. And this time around, we're probably going to be getting into shows 41 through 50. So it's still towards the bottom end of our list, because we had a total of 61 shows that we saw through to the end of their respective seasons. So this is on the kind of latter half of that. That said, all of the shows that we'll be talking about on this list all came in above average. In fact, there are shows that are straying from, they're kind of straddling that line between average and above average. So even down this far in the list, we have some shows that are doing pretty well. But to be fair, all of them had some flaws or some issues that kept them from really excelling. Mm-hmm. And in some cases, kind of held them back pretty far. But at the same time, I think in general, I'm going to say, with one exception, a lot of these shows were more or less on the same level as what they had been the previous season. So it's always a little bit of a mixed bag. This season, more than ever, we saw shows that were kind of coasting in a strange way. But anyway, we're going to go ahead and get started with that. And then if we have any other open topics or just kind of updates, we'll get into those as well. Edmund, why don't you give just the general recap, or not recap, but disclaimer.
Disclaimer. I will let you know that as we get into these series, we might reveal things that happen during these seasons. At the very least, yes, you might be spoiled, but hey, these are all things that have already spooled out, and it might give you something that you want to go back to and revisit or discover for the first time over the summer.
True, true, true. And so we are going to start off with our number 50 show, coming in at an average of 7.52, which is a slight improvement over its second season. We have Sleepy Hollow Season 3, a season that I think many of us that were watching, certainly I believe Edmund, you and mm-hmm. I talking about it, we were coming to this conclusion, thought that it was the final season of the show almost immediately.
Yes, it certainly felt that way.
It had the feel of a show that was on its way out. The budget had clearly been reduced, and it just felt like it was crawling towards its end. And yet, it's on the list of renewals mm-hmm. for season 4, and we've actually reported on some of the major changes that they're throwing into the concept. So yeah, very strange, very strange. Your recollection, I guess, other than what I just gave, is a general criticism of the show.
Well, certainly. I mean, I was, it was no surprise that yes, it was a slight uptick from season 2. But season 2 is the one which I remember primarily for the introduction of completely extraneous new members of the team. Whoever the refugee from Baywatch was, Holly or something like that. With this season, I mean, they did manage to get away from that. I mean, also, there was sort of washing away the good with the bad to some extent. Losing Ichabod's wife was a major improvement, even if it meant that John Noble had to go as well. But with this season, it felt like certain elements they were refocusing on, notably central team of Ichabod and Abby, while not making them romantic, which was always one of the keys, but still introducing those elements sort of in the background. Things still didn't, they still weren't recapturing that magic from the first season. The new big bad with Pandora and her her god lover, never quite had visceral sense of dread that the Headless Horseman and the other Horsemen of the Apocalypse managed to generate. And certainly, I mean, once they came down to that that ending, which we then later knew, because the actress Nicole Beharie did want to move on, but losing Abby when the relationship between the two of them as the two witnesses was so central to the show. I mean, it's renewed, but as far as I'm concerned, I mean, it's coming back as a completely different show.
Yeah, it's got to, right? I know that some people, I guess, are still upset over the casting changes, and you've made a pretty good summary there of some of the reasons why they made those changes. But I will be honest, I've said it many times before, the show to me is Ichabod Crane. Mm-hmm. If they can keep him intact, that's a big part of it. But I still feel like he was intact within a certain world, and that was part of the fun. If they, I don't see how they can keep him the same if they've changed so much about what's around him.
Yeah,
I'll find out because I'm still curious about this show. I really, you know, there's a part of me that still wants it to succeed. But yeah, there's a reason why it's as low as it is on the list. It never quite got back to that promise and potential of its first season. All right, next on the list is a show that has also gotten some mixed reviews or mixed opinions of late, and that is Elementary, which came in at, is it the fourth or fifth season this year?
No, it was the fourth.
It was the fourth, okay.
Yeah.
Came in at an average of 7.54, which was a slight, very slight drop, 0.02 of a point, so barely a drop at all. And another show that is once again renewed. But you guys are the ones who have been reviewing Elementary this past season. What do you think? Is that score reflective of the quality? Is it pretty much still churning away the way that it has in the past, or was it? Did you feel like maybe that was hiding a few things? Because it seemed like you guys were back and forth constantly on this show.
Yeah, I think. I think it is reflective of where the show is at now. I mean, there, you know, there was a certain formulaic nature to it, you know, where it has sort of slid into that that standard CBS procedural mold, and at the same time, what I found frustrating was ever since that first season where they did the, you know, where they pulled the big you know, sort of big bad reveal with Irene and Moriarty being the same person in this incarnation, I feel like there's been a reluctance to pull that kind of trigger in the subsequent seasons, and I guess part of my dissatisfaction was with John Noble moving from Sleepy Hollow to Elementary. Interesting, they're right next to each other. as Sherlock's father, and it seemed like they they were sort of teasing of he was going to bring the, you know, some darker, more Machiavellian elements to the show, and then I was quite disappointed that they wound up pulling back on that, not quite as much as they did with Mycroft in previous seasons, but at the same time, I mean, you know, having the season, you know, it just didn't really sit well with me of introducing this whole sort of mysterious, you know, the corporate cabal, you know, pulling strings behind the scenes, and Moreland winding up as the head of the organization, but not in a sinister, oh no, you know, now he's going to be out for us, but in this new lighter, easier Moreland, you know, who actually is swears he's not going to pose a threat to Joan and Sherlock, so. You know, it was sort of this soft peddling of some of the more potentially villainous elements, which I felt was perhaps getting a little too far away from the source material for me to be comfortable with it.
Hmm. Gary, how about you?
Well, he strikes a few good points. In general, I think you're right. You know, the good episodes were good, and the filler episodes were horrible this season. So it's the good stayed about even, and then when the episodes dropped, they really seemed to drop. I enjoyed, I did enjoy John Noble's appearances a great deal. I felt that bringing Watson back into the house again and keeping her more active definitely helped as well. The case of the week seemed to stifle some storylines sometimes, especially as we were dealing with Sherlock's own personal life and issues. Sometimes the having to throw a case in the middle of that was often distracting and annoying. I wish they could give it a break once in a while, but I don't think they can for various reasons. But so like I said, they know what to do and they can do it well, but when they do it bad, it's horrendous. There's no sort of middle ground to it, and there should be.
Mm.
The the stuff is there to continue to do good to exceptional programming, but between the handcuffs of the weekly mystery, sometimes I think causes the more interesting storylines to either be simplified or almost eliminated altogether, or in a sense resolved so quickly that they lack depth.
It's unfortunate, but that's again why it kind of winds up being down at this end of the spectrum. So, like you said, Edmund, not too surprising maybe that it's right next to Sleepy Hollow on the list.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
Also down at this end of the list at number 48 is The Vampire Diaries Season 7, coming in at an average of 7.55. So not too far off from either one of those two. This was, again, just a slight drop from the previous season, but a lot of the same problems. When the show was working well, it was working really well, but then it would come up with some plot lines that were just terrible. And when it was bad, it was bad. It definitely drearily mediocre at times, and ended the season with the plot line with a character that I really just don't like very much. So probably is why it was, instead of being more towards the 8 range, it was straying more towards the between 7 and 8, which is, again, a little bit of a drop. And if I remember correctly, I do still have everything open here, but if I go and I take a look... Yes, this is essentially the lowest scored season of the series to date. So, yeah, not a whole lot of not a whole lot there. I believe that it's been renewed, but there is a lot of talk that while everyone assumed this was the final season, I think the assumption is next year, although it has been renewed, will be the end. So it may have even been announced, but I'm not recalling that it was. A show that has already been given the axe and was, in fact, canceled well before the season was over, and therefore they really just kind of spooled out the episodes in perfunctory fashion, and in some cases you couldn't even find them, is our show at number 47, Legends Season 2, coming in at an average of 7.63. And I believe, Edmund, you were the one that helped us keep the spirit alive by actually seeing all the episodes.
I know we were saying we were talking about all the ones we made it all the way through to the end. They did, of course, they did do that strange thing, and I think it was I saw the timestamp on it the other day, was they spooled out the last three episodes on like Christmas Eve, I think, or something
there
like that.
Go.
It was, yes, definitely during the holidays, and I have to admit I have not seen all three of them. So
oh, okay, it may have been me then. I'm going back in. In fact, but, yes, I do believe I'm the one that managed to make it through.
Yeah.
But that, you know, said, this season did somehow manage, after a very rough start, to pretty much come in at exactly the same score as the first season. It's just the ratings were dramatically lower.
Yeah. And the other odd thing is that, of course, I mean, you know, they so completely restructured the show for this second season that, I mean, this is something more akin to True Detective or Fargo of, the first season was, you know, one anthology. The second season was a completely different story, which, you know, can actually kind of work when you're dealing with a main character who's not quite sure of his memories and who he actually is from time to time. So, certainly two dramatically different storylines and settings. While I am a huge fan of spy dramas, and especially your European based spy dramas, this story was just, it was not really holding me. I think it's especially as they got into some of the storylines more revolving around the daughter and using her as the lever, it was getting into territories that I was finding, I mean, not completely distasteful, but that I was getting more and more uncomfortable with, let's put it that way.
Unfortunate. But that's a series that has, like you said, they pretty much put that on, just dumped those episodes out. So certainly they were not looking, as I recall, they were putting them out at two at a time and stuff like that. And, mm-hmm. They were burning that off almost from the start.
Yeah, no, and I believe the final three was in one 3-hour block.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So really not exactly putting a lot of faith and effort into it. Unfortunate, but there we are. Next on the list is our show at number 46. And that is the first season of Ash vs. the Evil Dead. And this one, I know you definitely were the one making sure that we got a full season's worth of reviews in for. This one coming in at an average of 7.64. And this one has, of course, been renewed. Yes. And definitely a show that it was more than tongue-in-cheek.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, as with the original films, I mean, you had, not just Bruce Campbell and Sam Raimi and, pretty much all the major people behind the films doing this, but yeah, this was over the top comedy horror, and knew it, and made sure you knew it too. So I mean, it was a lot of fun. I know I had a I felt that they were it was a bit of a stretch the way that they managed to keep themselves in a position to continue on to another season. But then again, we are talking about the horror genre, so. Coming up with slightly implausible ways to have sequels is kind of all in that same wheelhouse anyway.
Yes, indeed. So yeah, I'm looking forward to where they go with that particular second season. I'm sure it will be wacky, mm-hmm. to say the least. Next on the list at number 44, or number 45 rather, is the fifth season of Homeland, coming in at 7.67 average, and that is literally a 100th of a point rise above the fourth season, which is really kind of surprising when you consider the fact that I think the fourth season was our least favorite by far.
If I'm remembering right, no, the problem with the fourth season was that was the one all in Pakistan, etc.
It was the third season that was the biggest problem.
Third season, the miraculous return and then demise of Brody. But no, the problem with the fourth season was that they seemed to be picking up a lot of momentum. There was some really good stuff going on, and then the finale just fell completely flat.
Right. That's true.
And it was the thing of bringing themselves back decently, but then just leaving a very bad taste in the mouth at the end. With this series, funny thing is sort of like with Legends. I mean, they were in Germany with some stuff going on, at least Catalyst going on in the Middle East. Delving into much more conventional spy areas, and I thought we're doing a decent job, it wasn't like sort of the complete collapse that I felt happened in the finale, the previous season. They couldn't quite bring it home in a completely satisfying manner.
Well, as I recall, last season was the one where it was basically the let's torture the hell out of Quinn.
Well, season. Oh yes, that too. Yes, that's right.
And it was basically he was Kenny from South Park.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but no, and also of course yes. And kind of surprising for a show that kept on far too long with the Carrie and Brody stuff. They did have this rather intriguing relationship being established between the two of them, and these two wonderful actors to do it. And instead, they just had Quinn being put through the absolute ringer, decided not to explore where Carrie and Quinn might wind up at all, really, in the end.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think we know, we've heard that it's going to be something like at least two, if not three seasons more of Homeland.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got more to see whether or not they can, somehow they'll bring Quinn back and torture him more. All right, next on the list at number 44 is the fifth and final season of Haven, coming in at an average of 7.68. And that was a nice uptick of roughly 0.2 of a point up from the previous season. And as I recall, it was one of these seasons that was split in half,
mm-hmm.
and aired over the course of 2 years. So we have a little bit of a jump, but this was a tale of two halves. I think we remembered the first half seemed really slow, And then the second half of the season, actually, as we were worried that they weren't going to be able to bring the series to a satisfying close, just nailed it and knocked it out of the park. Gary, I remember in particular you really liking the series finale.
Oh, I sure did. I mean, you're right. As they were closing out the series, they made a running leap to tie every last little knot and dangling plot thread that they could. They even had what I'll call old home week and were bringing back characters we hadn't seen for several seasons just to have them make a sort of last cameo appearance, which was nice for all the fans. And it ended up very satisfying. I didn't know when they, at the end of, I'll call it, I guess, 5A, the first part of the season, how they could ever manage to reach the end point with such a limited number of episodes. We were all sort of scratching our heads saying there's no possible way that they can really tie up, you know, tie up the new villain they introduced, the sort of old plot, and get everything done. But they managed to do it and do it very well, and you know, gave us a very happy ending at the end. And of course, I still think she remembers who she was. At least that's what I like to go with. So, again, a very a happy ending, loose ends tied up, guest appearances from you know important people throughout the series towards the end. Well done. They pulled it off extremely well. As I look at the development of the show from oddity of the week through the overarching arcs of stories that they put in for several of the characters actually, and to get bring them all to a satisfying close. Well done. Well done.
Yeah. It did manage to pull itself out of the worrying pattern that they had earlier in that season to really have a successful last run there. And I remember being excited in those last like 10 episodes or so in the final season of just week after week, they would just deliver surprise after surprise. And it all actually fit together pretty well when you went back and looked at it. So despite a lot of changes in plans over the years, they still managed to bring everything home pretty well. All right, next on the list at number 43 is the second season of iZombie, coming in at a 7.78, which is pretty much it was true all season long. As I was tracking this one, they would be maybe a hundredth of a point lower, hundredth of a point higher, but man, they just seemed to be right on par with the first season the entire way through. Even when we seemed to not be quite as happy with where the plot was going, our scores were reflective of us thinking the show was pretty much steady as it went. So, and it delivered a really strong ending. And it's renewed.
Indeed.
That's the part that I like the most. Edmund, your thoughts or recollections of the second season?
Ranking and consistency, I mean, makes perfect sense to me, because I mean, the CW shows, even though technically, you know, yes, it is based on a comic book, but it's always felt like one of those where it's certainly taking itself as seriously or as Arrow or even the Flash does, I think of it more in the continuum of sci-fi's shows like Eureka or Warehouse 13, where it's it is genre related, but with tongue in cheek sometimes, and certainly given the creators loving to throw in fun genre references whenever they can, so it's one of those where it's not demanding in terms of plot and machinations, you know, although there are certainly plenty of those, nice little twist at the end of the season into a whole other level of how zombies are organizing themselves in this their brave new world version of things. It continues to be a very fun, enjoyable show.
Absolutely. And let's see, next is on the list, I keep on going to the wrong page. speaking of, certainly we've had a lot to say about this show lately, but Wayward Pines, it came in at number 42 on our list, the first season at least, at an average of 7.79. And as we know, it was renewed, because we're talking about the second season now. And as we know, as we've said a few times, it's kind of not been meeting the same level. So, we've talked about what hasn't been working this season, but guys, what do you remember working in the first season that maybe isn't now? I guess maybe for me, it's the fact that it was clearly based upon an existing storyline.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that gave it an ability to overcome what felt like some miscasting, because as I recall, it was Matt Dillon, right? Was the guy at the...
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. He really didn't seem to have much of a personality. So the fact the plot was working and it had that really good hook of just what was the nature of Wayward Pines. Now that that's all been revealed, I feel like they've been struggling to find something equally compelling.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think it was that hook of trying to, you know, revealing the mystery, doing that mystery, the little bits of misdirection where they'd go back to the, our actual current, 2015, 2016, present day, which did manage to mess with my head a little bit, so when the actual explanation came out, I was actually ready to say, well, is that really what's going on? And I think it was Bron Thumb was familiar with the books, and was saying, yes, that is actually the reveal. So, that's just the literary conspiracy theorist in me. I don't go in for those some of those present day conspiracy theories, but in books and movies and TV, I'm more than happy for there to be another machination under the machination. But I think that was the main thing was having that mystery to spool out, and now I'm in there basically explaining it to, in the intro of every episode.
True enough. True enough. Gary, how about you? Any other thoughts on Wayward Pines, the first season?
I recall the mystery annoying the heck out of me for the first few episodes of the season, as we finally started to get the reveal of what it was, and I felt that was when the show actually took a turn to improve. Actually, the thought that that they're in this situation and everyone has to work together, I felt was better than the Nazi style paranoia that had existed at the beginning of the series. People where they couldn't even speak freely for lack of being overheard and recorded. All that thankfully started to fade away, and I think that's where the show started to pick up a little bit. Although I remember the ending of this season being sort of very confusing to me, and I wasn't sure how they could positively move forward to the second season. And now that we're a few episodes into the second season, I still don't see how they can positively move forward. So that's what I remember of it.
Hmm. Yeah, that's true. So, and it also brings us to our number 41 show for this list, and that is Supernatural Season 11, coming in at an average of 7.81, and that is a full half point above the previous season. And of course, it has been renewed for a Season 12. I'm still shocked and awed by that. Happy, but still shocked and awed. And I guess for me, the biggest thing that I was kind of surprised by was the fact that they kind of gave me reason to think they weren't going to wrap everything up, and then they wound up doing a really good job of wrapping up the storylines and
pretty much,
really
yes.
clearing the deck for the new showrunners. And yeah, this was a really good conclusion to the story arc that Jeremy Carver started back at the beginning of season 8 and seemed to falter with in seasons 9 and 10.
Yes.
But yeah, if I go back and I take a look at the long story of Supernatural here and these scores, that this past season was the best season that we've had since season 5. Which is saying a lot, especially considering the fact that it almost felt like the entire Carver era was a sequel to season 5. It was like I almost wanted to pretend that seasons 6 and 7 never happened.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of fans feel that way too, but
yes.
It was just a really strong season. And you've been watching the show now for more than half of the run.
Yes.
So I think you can now consider yourself at least somewhat of a longstanding fan. And yep. What do you think? Was this
Yeah, well,
as strong as you've seen the show.
Certainly, yes, and the funny thing is, I mean, now that they've been reintroducing more and more elements from those first 5 years, I mean, it's just given me more and more incentive to since I'm now in the position where I can actually go back and watch those first 5 years with the backstory intact. But it felt like this was the season where they were pushing towards resolving a whole bunch of things, and certainly I was rather stunned to have them come to that ending with God in whatever form or guise, ascended in the heavens again, they're just really opening things up for potentially a completely different show, but a show with potentially a very different focus in season 12, and as we speculated, but when we were talking about the finale, certainly the whole introduction, this new expansion of the men and women of letters, and the possibility of the boys finally being called, and all of that, running around being hunters who just storm in and ask questions later, and whether that's the right way to go around things. So I don't know if that's what they're going to be doing, but certainly there was intimations of that, a good strong end to this current era of Supernatural, and intriguing things for wherever they wind up next.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Really just opened up a lot of doors narratively for season 12. So let's see. That's it. Well, how far are we into this episode?
We are about 37 minutes or so.
All right. Well, rather than try to jump into another segment here, we're going to go ahead and just wrap up this week with kind of open topics and updates as to what it is that we are currently doing or watching, things we've been up to in the last couple weeks. Gary, how about you?
I took it upon myself to expose my children to Firefly. Well, yes, they had caught snippets of episodes here and there, and looked at me funny when I would make some sort of reference to Stop the Signal or something like that. I had the opportunity to spend a few straight days with them, and we burned through every episode as well as the movie. And they're now fully versed. They're happy that they saw the series. And I'm not allowed to use wash jokes around the house right now because it's a little too soon.
Of course.
But while they've had exposure to it, they never actually sat down and watched everything. Now they have seen everything.
Yes.
And so that was quite a joy to pass that sort of geek mantle onto them now as well. So they both enjoyed it. They thought River's sort of explanation a little odd, and until they actually saw the Serenity movie, that's when her character sort of clicked for them. Mm-hmm. But before that, they were just sort of. They could not grasp what was going on with her for the TV series itself, and I could sort of see where they were coming from, but the movie definitely did cement everything for them, and overall they liked it. They enjoyed, laughed particularly strong at Janestown, and I'd say that was probably their favorite episode of the bunch.
And I do presume you did start with the pilot, not the train robbery.
Yes, that is correct. I went in the approved order for this.
There is no other order. I don't know what you're talking about. I've never heard of this.
And when I mentioned, and these three episodes, they never aired. They're like, what? What do you mean they never aired? They're great. I said, welcome.
Yeah, welcome to Firefly.
Welcome. So that was fun. I don't know if I mentioned before, I did go see I did talk about Finding Dory. What else? Anything else of interest? I've just been continuing to with the kids being off for summer. I'm trying to we're trying to do stuff, and we've been watching a lot of old movies. When I say old, without trying to hurt anyone's feelings, I'm talking about 1960s movies.
Hey.
The latest movie we watched was Robinson Crusoe on Mars. I can't remember if we saw it on Netflix or some other streaming service, but we had it available, and we went ahead and watched it, and it was cute and funny, and quite resourceful. My son, being a Boy Scout, appreciated a bit of it. The storyline was good, and Adam West was in it mm-hmm. as well, actually, which was a pleasant surprise. This was from, I guess, 64, so just prior to him becoming Batman, actually. But no, it was a fun, cute little movie. It shared in some of the same sort of aspects you would expect a movie named Robinson Crusoe to fall into. And some of it was a little bit hokey as well. But overall, it was a lot of fun. It's sometimes nice to watch some of these simpler movies with the kids and not have to worry about sexual situations, extreme drug use and violence for just violence sake. And so it was a lot of fun to watch it, and we'll probably hit up a few more. My kids we're still hankering to watch The Maltese Falcon. We'll probably knock that out before the summer's through as well, to complete our Humphrey Bogart year that, as we've been going through, Casablanca, African Queen, and the like. So I definitely trying to expose people to things we don't normally watch, much as we suggest to our listeners when it's slow, as it is now in TV world.
Hmm. Yeah, no, I have to say Robinson Crusoe on Mars, it is one of those definitely fun, more tongue-in-cheek 60s offerings, but being a little bit older than you guys and having to grow up with whatever TV offerings were around in somewhat of the science fiction wasteland of the late 60s and early 70s, I did have occasion to watch Robinson Crusoe on Mars on a couple of Saturday afternoons. So.
and a great Saturday afternoon film, exactly. Yeah, that's a good point for it.
All right, let's see. How about you, Edmund?
Not so much genre-related, although it did kind of end up sort of circling back there, but Endeavor, which is the prequel to the Morse detective series from England, has been spooling out on PBS for the past month or so. I've been enjoying that greatly, it was a bit of when Endeavor first started. This is basically the following his Morse in his early career, before he became the great detective with the fabulous car that he was in the classic original series. Basically, brought me back to that Oxford universe, because the sequel to Morse, the Inspector Lewis series, unfortunately lost me on its second episode, and it did go on for seven series, so they might have improved from this, but the second episode they had Lewis basically letting these two perpetrators get away with it, something that I could not imagine either Lewis or Morse ever allowing to happen, and it so soured me on what they were doing with the character, aside from the fact that they had also killed off his wife and child so that he could be on his own and a little eccentric, just like Morse was. And I was like, no, the whole point is Lewis was a different character than Morse, and I was interested in seeing how he took on the job. So anyway, I never went back to Lewis, but Endeavor I've enjoyed very much. This is the third series, and it's a lot of fun the way that they've been introduced. Introducing the various characters, the gentleman who will become Superintendent Strange. Of course, he's starting off just as a policeman in the earlier series, and is now starting to throw his political weight around and starting his rise to where, of course, he will wind up eventually supervising Morse, being above him, you're starting to see the seeds of that playing out, and then with this third series, they're also just doing some fun literary stuff, where the first episode was a main protagonist very deliberately based on the Great Gatsby, but a sort of Oxfordian version of him. Second episode, playing around with there was a supermarket magnate and his wife and family, the Richardsons, playing out a scene that was very much like Dustin Hoffman and in The Graduate, where you were almost expecting him to say, "You're trying to seduce me, Mrs. Richardson, aren't you?" But not quite. They didn't quite go that far. But some fun references. and you know, and just a very enjoyable continued exploration of the Morse character. One thing's been interesting is Sean Evans is certainly he's not trying to imitate John Thaw, you know, and he is naturally much younger than Morse was, but you can certainly see all the tendencies starting to play out, and because it was reminding me so much of Morse but was not actually John Thaw, I actually started watching some of the episodes from the very first series of The Sweeney, which was the classic 1970s British TV show. I mean, in terms of sort of general tone, I mean, it's sort of more, I'd say, along the lines of like Starsky and Hutch. I mean, not quite so ridiculously hip as the two of them, but certainly it's the hard drinking, fast talking, rules bending, suspect beating up from time to time. After I'd watched an episode or two of that, it's been ages since I'd watched Life on Mars, which of course took a lot of inspiration for The Sweeney. So I started interspersing. I would watch an episode of The Sweeney, then I would watch an episode of Life on Mars, and the congruences were a lot of fun.
Interesting. So let's see here. For me, I mean, similar to what you were saying, Gary, we didn't go with Firefly, but we've been definitely watching a lot of anime this summer, stuff that we have been trying to catch up on. We haven't had a whole lot of time to do. But we've also been running around quite a bit, so it's been a little bit difficult to do that. But for the most part, I've been trying to either catch up on shows like Noragami that we've always wanted to watch because it was a lot of fun, or some of the stuff that's come out this summer. And some of the titles that we've liked so far, we watched a show called ReLife, which is kind of a slice of life type of story. But the hook to this one is that, you know, there is this segment of Japanese population where they are effectively long-term unemployed. And it's a relatively high percentage of people that are young and professionals that just wind up being out of work, and they have a certain lifestyle. And the specific hook to this is that there is this experiment to say, if you take this pill, you can kind of de-age and you are going to go back to when you were in your, what we would consider to be high school years. And you get to relive a year of your high school years and see if you can correct some of the things that maybe prevented you from succeeding in the future. Mm. And after that year, the people that you interact with aren't going to remember that you were there and so forth. But yeah, so the whole story is this guy that then goes back and basically starts to not necessarily fix things, but at least starts learning about himself a little bit more. And in the process, you learn all the people that he's interacting with, and you know, they've of course got certain archetypes that are, but one of the nice things about it is that at least these people are written as a little bit more fleshed out and realistic characters. It certainly has its you know, certain conventions, but you definitely get to feel like it's a little bit more realistically written. So we enjoyed it quite a bit. The entire season is up on Crunchyroll. There's 13 episodes, and you can jump on them right away. It probably won't be that hard to figure out which character I like the most. The other show that we've been enjoying, or that I've been enjoying, is called Orange. There's only been two episodes as of the time that we're recording this, but it's the premise here is, again, it's a kind of a slice of life type of thing, but it's a girl in high school who gets a letter from herself 10 years in the future. And in the letter, it basically says, you know, this is going to happen. You're going to meet this person in the next, you know, couple days. And this is the way that I handled it. You need to handle it differently. And it alludes to the fact that, hey, something is going to happen. You don't want to make the same mistakes that I did and not know this person. So it kind of gives you the idea that there's a little bit of a romance angle, but already it kind of very heavily implies that the person that she's going to meet, he's not going to be alive later. So there's a little bit of a mystery as to exactly what has happened in the intervening time frame. But definitely a very poignant story. Even in the first two episodes, I found it surprising how they were able to really play on the emotions extremely well. And again, this is a group of characters that, at least in this case, they're even less adhering to specific archetypes. They're definitely a lot more realistic. And one of the things I like is that I just happened to see the volume in Barnes & Noble, and the cover, the art style is exactly the art style that they use in the anime. So I was really kind of happy to see that they captured something of the original work. Beyond that, there's one other one that I was just going to point out that I thought was pretty good. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing this correctly, but it's called Alderaan on the Sky. I believe it's Alderaan. This one definitely is perhaps a little bit more what one thinks of when they think of something like an anime adventure type of thing. It reminds me of if someone were playing a video game. Or like a Final Fantasy type of storyline, and they made an anime out of it, this is what it would be. But it's, you know, two empires at war, and these characters that get kind of pulled into the story. And, you know, there's a certain conventions in terms of how magic and combat take place in this particular world. But I liked it. The art style is good. I like the mixture of characters, and it definitely seems like there is a very specific story that's being told. So of the current summer fair, those are the ones that I've definitely already seen, and I'm enjoying them quite a bit if I haven't already finished them. I do intend to also look at the new Berserk anime that came out this summer, and also there is an adaptation of Tales of Zestiria that I would like to look into. But we're kind of watching a little bit of everything across the board in terms of the different types of shows. On top of the ones that we already have on our list. And of course, by the time this goes out, we'll have all seen Star Trek Beyond, right?
Yes.
I would think we're all going to see it almost immediately. So, yes. But we'll talk more about that, I'm sure, at a later date. But any other last thoughts here, guys, as we kind of round out our week? Gary, any last thoughts?
No. I think we've covered just about everything for this week.
Okay.
There's one other thing I wanted to mention on the book front. I have finally, after now that I've gotten into it, it's been far, far, far too long since I think I'm reading the 10th anniversary edition a few years after it came out. But I'm finally reading American Gods. Partially in anticipation of the Stars adaptation. I'm maybe 100 pages in, so really just starting, and I did start reading it without really thinking about the adaptation, I did discover the moment Mr. Wednesday appeared, and I read the description of him, and having seen just a couple of the production stills, my in my head book version of Mr. Wednesday is absolutely Ian McShane, and that's from what I've read of the character so far, it is perfect casting, it seems. On the flip side, since as if this wasn't a deliberate choice, but I started reading, and as I do, the impression of the characters form in my head, and my shadow does not really look like Ricky Whittle at all, but I'm still looking forward to seeing what both of them bring to the characters when that show gets to us, and certainly the way I'm cruising through the book, I will definitely have finished the book before the series premieres. So
that would probably be a good thing. Yeah, definitely. You want to have that novel done.
Yes.
Before this. All right. And as far as I know, we're just going to be, as I said, probably staying in the course as far as the episodic discussion is concerned. We've still got quite a bit to go in terms of our annual recap. And yeah, we got a few films that are coming out in the very near future that we're going to want to cover. So we're going to be keeping everyone informed as to when and where we're going to be covering that. So until next time.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google+, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the Critical Myth.